Hello and welcome to a Collector Box Light episode on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I will be opening up a subscription box and discussing the contents.
Hi, Nathan here again with another Comic Bento subscription unboxing segment. This is the October 2017 box, and as you could expect, it is a Halloween theme box. The email Comic Bento sent me was, this box is entitled Creatures of the Night. The little description email talked about a terrifying reinvention of a classic genre. A tale from everyone's favorite childhood nightmare maker. Ooh, is that Freddy Krueger? Magic, monsters, maladies, and mayhem. And an MSRP that is far from terrific. So, anyway, yeah, my guess it's going to be all kind of horror comic books for Halloween and everything. So, before I dive in, I'll just remind you guys again, Comic Bento, it's a box that comes once a month. It has four or five different trade paperbacks or hardcover books for give or take with subscription or give or take around $25 a month with discounts and such for longer subscriptions and such. I usually sign up for 6 months at a time, so I get a little couple bucks less every month. But anyway, if that's it, I'm just going to dive right into it. Let's see what we can have in the box this month. All right. Usually horror comics don't usually, you know, float my boat too much, but, you know, I found some good stuff in past ones. So, all right, now the trick is getting through this big, big package. They package this thing pretty tightly with a piece of cardboard on back, then they shrink wrap it together with another inside the bag and everything. So, anyway, boom, and they got a little card every month. Maybe I'll refer back to that, but anyway. On top, this is The Scourge from Aspen Comics. The complete miniseries by Scott Lobdell, Eric Battle, and David Curiel. From the mind of The Walking Dead executive producer Gail Ann Hurd. All right, I do not know a thing about this. You probably heard him say it before. I'm not a big fan of Aspen Comics. But, I mean, Scott Lobdell, you know, famous obviously for his late 90s X-Men or early 90s X-Men. And stuff. Eric Battle has some decent artwork. I've seen Eric Battle do some stuff in Green Lantern before. So hopefully this, obviously just kind of flipping through, I see a little bit of blood splatter, a little bit of gunplay, a little some demons. Yes. So this doesn't quite look like your typical Aspen Comics, like Fathom type of book. So that makes me feel a little bit better about this one. Next, from Valiant Comics, The Death-Defying Dr. Mirage. I believe I read this one a couple years ago. I checked it out from the library. I've read a lot of Valiant stuff, and I really enjoy Valiant a lot. Dr. Mirage, I know she was kind of a supporting character in the Shadow Man series for a little bit, but this is by Jen Van Meter, Roberto De La Torre, and David Barron. This collects issues 1 through 5 of The Death-Defying Dr. Mirage. All right, I like that one, but I will always give that one a read again. Oh, here's another one I have actually read before, and it was actually pretty awesome. From Archie Comics, Afterlife with Archie. Oh, yes, I enjoyed this when I read it. It's just a creepy, bizarre take. I never thought they would do this kind of take with Archie Comics. Archie Comics, as everyone knows, is your goody-goody boy, you know, the old-school comic stories, you know, two boys fighting over the same girl kind of thing, you know, all that kind of, you know, goofy old-school stuff. But this one took it for a complete twist with zombies and demons and magic and everything. I really got a kick out of it. I thought it was awesome. And I know the guy who wrote this, Roberto Aguirre Sacasa, I probably butchered that, and Francesco Francovilla. I know these guys are involved, I believe, with the Riverdale TV show. And I know some of the elements for the Riverdale TV show were taken from this, at least some general tone and stuff. So this is actually very cool. I'm going to give this a read again. I believe this collects issues. Let's see if I can find it here. I think it's issues just 1 through 6 or so. So I think the series went, maybe it's 1 through 5. I think the series went 10 issues and they split it up into 2 different trades. So but I enjoyed this one very much and I'm looking forward to giving it a read again. They had like a spinoff series, Sabrina. You remember Sabrina the Teenage Witch? It was, Sabrina the Teenage Witch was a very dark one, with demons and human sacrifice and everything. But it was just, it's just fun seeing those classic characters done with a really bizarre dark twist. And the last one, ooh, this is something I think my daughter will get a kick out of. R.L. Stine's The Man King, The Man Thing, Those Who Know Fear. If anyone knows Man Thing, he's a classic Marvel character. Kind of a ripoff, I think, of Swamp Thing, but don't quote me on the timeline there. But it's interesting that R.L. Stine is writing this one, because my daughter recently got into the Goosebumps movie and she started reading some of the Goosebumps books. So I wonder if this one is going to be child appropriate. It does say the reading on the back is teen plus, so I'm going to give this one a read before I hand it over to her. But R.L. Stine, modern classic horror writer for the, younger age set. This one, I'm excited to take a look at this one. Let's see, when did this one come out? This was just published in February of 2017. And it is issues, if I could find, issues 1 through 5 of it. So, all of these are fairly recent. The Man Thing's from 2017. This Afterlife with Archie's got a copyright of 2017. Dr. Mirage has a copyright of, this is gonna be like 2015. And this Scourge from Aspen Comics, that's got a, let's see, when was this one printed? I don't know. Actually, that's interesting. They don't have the normal little indica or whatever you call that stuff at the bottom of the opening cover pages to kind of tell you copyrights and this and that kind of stuff. So I'm sure this one's probably from a few years ago. Oh, wait, I found it. Copyright issue 0 and 1 through 6 of The Scourge. Copyright. Well, let's see if I could find a copyright date. I can't even find the copyright date in here. Anyway, I'm sure. Oh, the foreword's from 2017. So obviously this is very recent. So anyway, this is all a bunch of very recent books. I'm excited to read some of these. Like I said, half of these I have actually read, but actually kind of find that kind of fun sometimes. Sometimes I then take these and gift them to friends. Like in the box last month, one of the books was the first volume of Scott Pilgrim. I gifted that to a buddy of mine, and hopefully he'd read it. He'd seen the movie before, loved the movie. So I thought he'd get a kick out of the book. And while I'm at it, I'm talking about last month's books, why don't I give you a quick review of some of the books I read last month? One of the books in last month's, the theme was creator-owned, and one of the books was The Tick, Karma Tornado. That was actually pretty funny. The Tick was chosen to, along with other Earthlings from throughout history, to represent the planet Earth in some intergalactic Olympic-type games and stuff. Goofy as all stuff, where they're racing against dinosaurs and weird aliens. It was fun, goofy, tick craziness. At one point, he essentially became a herald of Galactus. Had to like clean his back and stuff. And it was just all funny stuff like that. Another one was Kaptara, Fear Not Tiny Alien from Image Comics by Chip Zdarsky. That was kind of like a squeamish, mild-mannered scientist is on a mission traveling to Mars or some outer planet. Somehow they go through some portal and they end up on some sci-fi fantasy type world, like a He-Man type of He-Man Masters of the Universe type of world. And so it's just the crazy adventures you get to there. That was decent. It was funny. The one that surprised me the most from the creator-owned box was Headlocked, A Single Step. It was a story about a young guy trying to get into professional wrestling. And I thought I wouldn't get into it because I'm not a big professional wrestling fan, but I actually enjoyed it very much. I was surprised. I was actually thinking about picking up the second volume. The artwork was so-so. I think some of the artwork in some of the chapters was done by actual professional wrestlers. But it was a good story, just the you know, dedication and drive it takes to make it in professional wrestling and how it's not completely fake. There's actually some blood and guts and damage being happened during that. And the last book that came was Virgil by Image Comics by Steve Orlando and J.D. Faith. That was a kind of a revenge story. A few people live underground in some Central American, South American country where homosexuality is illegal. And one night the police bust everyone in the house, take him to jail. One guy gets away, and then it's his revenge story to try to get back at the people who hurt his boyfriend. Great story, very violent, but I got a big kick out of it. I thought it was well done. Steve Orlando obviously has done a lot more stuff with DC Comics these days and everything, so it was nice to see his own creator-owned stuff there. It was a real quick one, like 100 pages or so, but I enjoyed that one very much. So, anyway, that is what I have for you for this month from Comic Bento. Like I said, Creatures of the Night was this one with R.L. Stein's The Man-Thing, Valiant Comics' Dr. Mirage, Afterlife with Archie from Archie Comics, and The Scourge from Aspen Comics. And just a little preview of next month, they just say the next month's theme for the November box will be teamwork. All right, and that's all I got for you guys today. Have fun.
The package in front of me now is the roughly 8.5 by 11 shiny pouch for Arctify.
I think you give it away by saying package instead of box.
It's not like I draw it out for too long. I mean, that was within about a 20-second period. But
I'm just saying.
These are usually short segments for the Arctify anyways, because it's open it. Oh, it's a shirt. And we're done. Well, so with that, let's open it. Say, oh, it's a shirt.
No. Let's skip to my favorite part. It's under $13, including shipping.
Yes. It is one that's easiest to stay on our list because they're usually fairly cool shirts. And again, the price is just eminently fair just for a t-shirt. And it's usually a cool one.
Yeah.
So shall we open it?
Yeah.
Oh, and that $13 or whatever includes shipping.
Yes.
All right. It is a gray Thor Ragnarok shirt. It's got like a side view of a Spartan helmet facing to the right with almost like a glittery, sparkly effect, a nice red plume on it, and in place, not in place, but it's got like a lightning symbol that goes through it and the helmet below it, which for my money looks kind of like Ultron, but is presumably, the bottom one with the green is presumably Hulk's helmet. The top one is presumably Thor's. Haven't seen the film yet. Gonna wait for Blu-ray. And then on the top of the back,
yeah,
it's got the Hulk versus Thor.
Yeah. Well, and I really like the silver on the gray. It looks different from the gray. And I see what you mean about the sparkle, but I think the silver just kind of pops.
It gives it a metallic kind of reflective sheen to a degree.
Yeah.
And to do that kind of metal on gray for a gray shirt is impressive. I like the design.
Yeah.
This is definitely one I could see wearing to work or something like that.
Yeah, and that red is nice and vibrant.
So, and just the two helmets facing the other way and stuff like that. The risk of wearing this right now is people would then assume I've seen the movie and spoil it for me. So, maybe a little while before I wear it, but it's definitely a cool shirt. And again, like we were saying, it's around $12, $13. They charge you the actual shipping cost.
Yeah, very cool.
So, definitely in favor of this. And again, that's Arctify. We'll have a link in the show notes, as always. Definitely worth checking out. Okay, the box in front of me now is the Firefly Cargo Crate. It's about 11 inches by about 7.5 by, we'll say, 5.5, which is standard size.
Yeah.
This is one where the crate itself is kind of the shipping box as well as the mystery box. They don't overbox it. I point that out because not only does it have the cool stuff of, hey, it's the Firefly Cargo Crate, and I have it go to a UPS store location. They always kind of comment on that. Actually, the lady this time was a little surprised because it took me a few days to come pick it up in the next one, starting to wonder if I was okay or something. But I also mention it because they've got the sticker on the outside of the planet or whatever. And invariably, when the box comes in and the UPS store puts their sticker so it goes to the right spot in the storage place so they can put the little ticket in my mailbox saying, hey, you've got this package, they invariably put that on top of the sticker on the box, which is why I appreciate that inside the box will be an unused sticker so I can actually see what it is.
Yeah.
And there's a perfectly good other side of the box they could use for the UPS store sticker.
That's what I was thinking.
And invariably, I never think to mention it to them the next time either I go in or...
I actually think it's twice as funny because once or twice when I've gone to pick up your packages, the folks at the UPS store have said they keep meaning to listen to the podcast.
Somehow, given what I've just said, this is going to be the one.
That's what I was thinking.
All right, let's open this up, see what we got. All right, we're going to start with a t-shirt. It is dark gray with
Dark gray or brown?
I'm going with dark gray. I don't think it's brown, but we'll say that the lighting here is less than ideal. It's got a, I think, the Serenity circle symbol with the Firefly Serenity in front of that in kind of a pale... The circle thing's in orange, pale, orangey, burnt orange, brown sort of a thing with some flowers and such.
I don't think that's the Serenity circle, but I don't know what that circle is.
It's one of the circle-type logos associated with the show.
Okay. I don't think it's
Serenity itself.
I thought you were thinking of the logo they used with the movie.
No, it's okay. Not that.
Right. Okay.
It almost looks like a circular hedge mage.
Yes.
Kind of design.
Yeah.
So, nice shirt. Not sure why it's got the flowers. Maybe the end will be the answer key.
I'm thinking it must have a Kaylee connection.
Now, speaking of the Circle Serenity logo, the next one has the Circle Serenity logo, so we know it's definitely not that. But the next one is the Serenity logo doormat.
I like.
And it's a 24-inch diameter, so it's circular and such. So that's kind of cool.
I like.
That's from Geek Home. It's a quantum mechanics item.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
And that goes back to our having said that quantum mechanics just has a lot of products we've liked over the years.
Well, and I think it's cool when they do boxes like this that they've got the facilities and whatnot to be able to create objects like this doormat and stuff.
Yeah.
They're not just at the mercy of, well, what's out there that's cool. It's what would be cool and can we make that if we need to, which I love that aspect.
Yeah.
All right, this time the Little Damn Heroes mini master is Inara.
Mm-hmm.
It's got her in her blue and dark red outfit and such.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those where it's not like a dead ringer for the actress, but it's clear which character it is.
Yeah, well, and it's one of the outfits that had the more exotic look, which I think was the best look for Inara.
But these are the type that if you could imagine... This is what the characters would have looked like had it been like a comic book or something prior to being envisioned as a TV show and then cast.
Yeah.
But it's one of those where it's clear again who the characters are and whatnot. And they're not striving for that dead-on likeness. Because sometimes when they do that, it can come off a little still and lifeless in an odd thing.
Yeah.
Odd way.
Yeah. All right. A journal?
Yes. Let me open this up so I can actually read the thing a little better.
Crinkle, crinkle, crinkle.
It is the House Madrasa companion notes. So presumably Inara's notebook or planner or whatever. Yeah, it's just a notebook, but kind of suitably fancy. It's got a red, not leather, but that sort of a feel cover with an embossed design.
And the same circle with the flowers that's
so
on the shirt.
So presumably that's... her house or whatever companion house she was part of.
And the liner paper at the front and the back of the book is the same image that's on the shirt.
Yeah.
So remember, was it for the movie that she had, or at the end of the series where she had left the ship?
The end of the series, she was going to leave the ship. In the movie, she was back at the house.
Yeah. And they knew it was a trap. Yeah, so this was probably in that area, that image.
Well, and this is what's cool of being able to have the shirt and this object have the same art, not by happenstance, but by clear design.
Yes.
This is one where I forget how many of these boxes we've gotten by now, but they've gone far past where I think they could have gone without running out of ideas, and they haven't run out of ideas.
I'd say we're at least 12 boxes.
Something like that. Sounds about right. They've kept it themed well, and the...
Maybe 9 boxes. But yeah, I like the theme. I like that there's a Minnie Mouser every time. I like that there's, I want to say, the one special object, whether it's the book, the flask, the something that's the $10 item or so that you just didn't think would be in there.
Or in this case, something that could have been a prop on the show sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they do cool stuff with that. They do really well on the theming. This time the pin is representative of the house Madrasa. At least I'm assuming that's how to pronounce it.
Yeah, I think so.
So again, heavy on the Inara theming, as is their wont to.
Yeah.
To go with a single character. This is the planet sticker.
Sinon,
which is where the house was in the movie, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first box that we've actually been able to say we've rewatched the show and the movie. So if you're wondering if we're ever going to get around to those episodes, the question is, when are you going to get around to listening to it?
I know. We actually put it up. And, you know, I'll admit, I was amazed when I realized it had been 15 years since the show aired.
Yeah, we got it up right around the 15th anniversary. And again, it's an awesome show. Holds up well.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to rewatch. We've got a postcard here, presumably from the planet Sinon or whatever, with the mountainside retreat. And we've got the Can't Stop the Signal magazine, obviously focusing on Inara. Let's see what we've got in it. Some cosplay pointers for doing a Firefly companion. People having sent in photos of the stuff they've gotten. One did it actually fairly nice display. Of the stickers and the money they did the one time and whatnot. Article on compatibility of spirit, the psychology of love and hate in relationships, Inara and Mal, which is kind of funny. And then what they've got in the crate, it's a wave card, not a postcard.
Ah.
The Inara Little Damn Heroes Mini Master, the sticker, the padded journal, the mat, lapel pin, and the shirt.
You know what wasn't this time? Not that I'm putting it as a negative, but just it seems like it's been every box before, was one of the qubits.
I was just going to mention that. This is the first one that didn't have that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why. I'm curious about that.
My gut says because this was a very loaded box. I mean, that's not an inexpensive doormat.
No, the doormat was a bigger ticket item than we often get.
Mm-hmm. And the journal.
The journal, the shirt, and stuff like that. But it was the first one that didn't have that.
Yeah.
And the box was pretty full, so it may have also been a space issue.
Yeah.
But at this point, they've done most of the main characters. In front, did they do Doc? I think they did, because they did one of the inner planets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think which of the main characters they haven't done at this point, because they've even done the ship. And this is where I think the longer the box goes, the more challenging it gets for them to keep the theming up and interesting.
Mm-hmm. But I think things like the doormat show that they've got a lot of stuff that they can pull on and to pull concepts from.
Oh, absolutely. Because even after doing theming for each of the characters, there's the episodes that you can go back, each of the planets. I mean, there's a lot you can go back and dig out because it's a fairly rich narrative universe.
Yeah.
So I'm still enjoying this box. It was a good excuse, again, to go rewatch the show and the movie. And looking forward to what they keep doing with this.
Yeah, very cool.
Hi, Nathan here with the November 2017 Comic Bento unboxing segment. The box this month that Comic Bento told me about, the theme for it is teamwork. Teamwork brings you a massive collection of books. Our first ever 6-book box, Big Tales of Certain Streaming Sensations, Spies, Superheroes, Teenagers, Mystics, Heroes and Villains United Against Common Foes, a $75 plus suggested retail price. I had a couple of comments on the forum about this. I always have fun trying to guess what's in the box. John noticed during the last Mayo Trades report, there was a few Runaways trades. I think like 3, 4, and 5 of the Runaways digests were on there around the 1500 range, which is usually where a lot of the Comic Bento stuff is falling these days. Anyway, it was kind of an odd outlier. And I thought, you know, with that little clue there, certain streaming sensations, I'm actually recording this on the day that the Runaways TV show debuts on Hulu. So, that's my big guess is we might get like 3 Runaways books in here. Who knows? I usually never get these right, but these are all my wild guesses. But anyway, I'm just going to start to dive right in. Bear with me and all my cutting noises. We will see. I like the Comic Bento, the box. Actually, it's a very sturdy box, and they seal it up really well. You got a nice big piece of cardboard on the back of it just to keep it all straight so nothing gets all bent and everything. So I like it a lot. Let's see. There's going to be 6 books coming out. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I'll set the card to the side. First one. I was right. I see Runaways. Oh, and there is 2 and 3 Runaways books. I've got Runaways Digests, Volume 4, 5, and 6. Runaways Volume 4, True Believers. Runaway Volume 5, Escape to New York. And Runaways Volume 6, Parental Guidance. These are the smaller digest versions. Not your standard trade paperback size, but I've read these books before. I loved them. I think Brian K. Vaughan, right? I believe. Let me double check, but I believe he was the original writer. Yeah, that was him. It's just a fun series of a bunch of kids who find out. Not a big spoiler. It sets the whole premise up in the first issue. Is that a bunch of teenage kids find out their parents are supervillains, and then they run away. You know, to try to find their way in the world. You know, maybe stop their parents from doing what they're doing. Love the series. I've read it years ago. Haven't read it in a while. But today on Hulu, as of November 21st, Hulu just put out a TV series for The Runaways. The trailer for it looks pretty cool. I have not watched it yet. Didn't get up early enough this morning to do that. But some of the preview reviews I read said it actually is one of the more faithful adaptations. It really sticks to it really well. So I'm excited for the Runaways TV series. And I'm excited to take a look back through these books again. A little odd that they give us volume 4, 5, and 6 and not 1, 2, and 3. I'm sure that was just kind of the deal that Comic Bento could get, but they're still great stories. And since I know the concept, I'm still going to have fun rereading these. I'll have to read them again. Wonder if I can give them to my 9-year-old daughter or not. Don't know if she's quite up to that yet. All right, moving on to our next book from Aspen Comics, Mind Field, the complete first volume by J.T. Kroll and Alex Connaught. Well, I'm usually, as I've said many times, I'm not an Aspen fan, but just kind of flipping through to start, this is not your typical Fathom or Executive Assistant Iris type of book. Let's see. In hopes of developing the ultimate wiretapping system against the war on terror, the CIA has reached into their own history for answers. Reviving the failed MK-Ultra program from the 1950s, the CIA implements experimentations with hallucinogenic substances in order to create a squad of enlightened agents with acute telepathic abilities. Connor, Erica, Isaac, and Kasim represent this new breed of government agent, able to read any situation as well as any mind. While this new agency team struggles with their psychic conditions and the fallout from possessing such power, a new threat emerges, determined to bring the United States crashing down in flames, all in the name of revolution. I'm not sure. Sounds interesting. Like I said, I'm more excited since this is not your typical Aspen hot lady type of book. Let's see. This is our first printing. This printing is from 2017. Contains Mindfield Volume 1, Issues 0 through 6, and some bonus stories. Looks like this was just first printed in 2017. So this looks like it's a fairly recent book. So I'm kind of excited to check that out. So moving on to our next book. Here's one I've read, but kind of sticking with what I'm always excited whenever these pop in. It's another Valiant book. And this is Archer and Armstrong Volume 1, The Current Series. This is a fun story when the character Armstrong, he has this magical pouch that can just fit anything in it. And they go on an adventure inside of the pouch. And there's a whole crazy world down there. All the junkies collected over the millennia that he's been around. Really fun. The artwork on this one is a little more cartoonish, and it's very much a comedy. But I really love just the oil and water Archer and Armstrong, you know, the polar opposites, and how they, you know, how they deal with things and everything. I really enjoy it. It's a good series. Yeah, so excellent. Archer and Armstrong Volume 1. And the last one from Zenoscope Entertainment, we have Grim Fairy Tales, The Dream Eater Saga, Volume 1, by, let's see, this is by Raven Gregory, Joe Brucia, Ralph Tedesco, written by Raven Gregory, and then pencils by a whole lot of different people. This is reprinting, Grim Fairy Tales, The Dream Eater Saga, issues 0-6. This one came out in, let's see if I can find a copyright date. This is from December of 2011 when this one was printed. I've read a couple of Zenoscope's Grim Fairy Tale saga. Some of them are interesting. Some of them are, you know, kind of like how I was complaining about the Aspen comics, you know, just hot sexy ladies, you know, hot sexy lady versions of these innocent little fairy tale characters. But some of them are good. Some of them are interesting. We'll see what happens with this one. This one, the entity known as the Dream Eater has been released and walks the earth searching to destroy all of those born with supernatural abilities. Now the heroes and villains of the Grim Fairy Tales universes must join forces to battle an all-powerful being that could very well prove to be the end of them all. So it looks like it's going to tie in a lot of different Grim Fairy Tale characters. Let's see, there was a little... Looks like the Neverland characters, some Wonderland characters... Salem's Daughter, I don't know what that is, The Piper, a few of the different characters in here. I'll give it a read. Hopefully my initial biases will be wrong, but I'm looking forward to checking that one out too. So anyway, that's the general overview of what we've got today. We've got three volumes of Runaways. Runaways Digests 4, 5, and 6. We have Mind Field, the complete first volume from Aspen Comics. We've got The Adventures of Archer and Armstrong, Volume 1, In the Bag, from Valiant Comics. And then we've got, from Zenoscope Entertainment, we've got Grim Fairy Tales, The Dream Eater Saga. Like Comic Mento said, this is one of their first 6-book boxes. So there's quite a lot of it. I know these little digests for the Runaways, they've got a cover price of just 10 bucks a pop. Mindfield has a $20 cover price. Archer and Armstrong's got a $10 cover price. And the Grim Fairy Tales is a 16. So that's 1, 2, 3, 40, 50, 60, 76 bucks. So it is over 75, just barely, like they claimed. It's about $76 cover price. I got it all for about 25 bucks or so. That includes shipping and everything. 26, 27, I think, something like that. I usually sign up for a 6-month subscription, so I usually get a little bit cheaper. But anyway, that's it for this month's box. A quick review of last month's box. There were 4 or 5 books in there. One of the books, actually, you got John mentioned on one of the last trades mail reports about the Man Thing by R.L. Stine. That was in last month's box. And oh yeah, that was a stinker. Oh yeah, that one was not very good at all. The whole conceit of the Man Thing is that he's kind of just this silent guy who lumbers towards you and you burn with fear and everything. And in this book, he's talking and contemplating his life and everything and thinking out loud. And it made no sense and it was very, very stupid. The Death-Defying Dr. Mirage was a decent little book from Valiant Comics about Dr. Mirage, someone who can listen to the spirits around her and she goes on an adventure to save her deceased spouse. Afterlife with Archie, zombie Archie characters. So much. That's actually real fun. Imagine you throw Walking Dead and Archie together and mash that up. That is really good stuff. And the last one was The Scourge, from Aspen Comics. That was kind of a, supernatural where like an infection infects this guy and then he starts to become like a crazy gargoyle and he scratches another person and all of a sudden there's crazy gargoyles taking all over New York City and this is one guy's the rough and tough cop and he's gonna stop it all. So it was okay. Nothing nothing to get too crazy excited about. It was decent. So, but those are the books from last month. It was a decent box. Some stinkers like Man Thing and some other decent ones like Dr. Mirage and Afterlife with Archie. But anyway, that's all I got for you right now. This is the November 2017 Comic Mento box. Look forward to hearing from you next month. Actually, they say next month the theme will be legacy. So we'll see what that means. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, the box in front of me now is the DC Legion of Collectors box. It's about 12 inches by about 7 inches by about 6 inches, which is pretty much the standard size, I think, for this box. Looks like an Aquaman silhouette on top.
So it does.
I'm guessing that may be part of the theming.
We're roughly Justice League time.
Definitely Justice League theming. The inside of the box has the JL Justice League movie logo, Wonder Woman's movie logo, Cyborg's movie logo, the Batman movie logo, the Flash logo, a Superman logo, and an Aquaman logo. Some of those are more movie specific.
The C would be Cyborg, I take it?
Yes.
Okay. The Arrow-esque one would be Aquaman?
Yeah.
Okay. Just, you know, seeing if I play along very well.
Yeah, you're doing all right. All right. The t-shirt is a black one with the Justice League kind of drawings of the movie versions of Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Superman, Batman, Flash, and Cyborg. And it's okay, but frankly, I think they could have gotten a little bit better art.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but I look at the artists that I'm used to seeing at the DC stable or whatnot, and it's much better. And well, I was showing you the other day the Earth X crossover poster they did.
Yes.
By Phil Jimenez, who is just an amazing artist. The worst you could say about him is, he's not George Perez, but who is, and he's got a fairly close style.
Yeah.
You know, whereas this doesn't have quite that polish, that level of detail or whatnot. It's good, but they could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
The pin this time is the Legion of Collectors with Batman from the movie version. You know it's the movie version because he's got the ridiculous-looking sunglasses.
Yeah.
All right, this next item, I'm assuming, goes with something else. It's a red straw.
Nope, that's a standalone item, and I think red means it's Superman-themed.
I'm assuming there's a water bottle tucked in here somewhere, maybe. I don't know. That's just kind of weird.
They didn't want it to bend.
Next is Funko Sticky Notes with the Flash movie version. You can tell it's the movie version because of all the black stuff on his costume. I don't like how they make the costume so busy.
Yeah.
And frankly, you know, I was in a Target and a Walmart recently, and in each of those, they've got all the Justice League toys and stuff like that coming out for the movie. And I don't really like the Flash design. I haven't seen enough of the character to know if I like him or not. But it's directly competing with the TV show that I'm really enjoying.
Yes, which makes it really hard.
Yeah. I think the fact that they've decided the movie and TV universes are different makes sense and works on a certain degree, but now they're competing against each other in addition to against the comics. Okay, next item is the Pop Hero little figure, the Funko Pop. This is the movie Aquaman, so the Jason Momoa version, with a wave kind of a thing behind him. Looks kind of cool. He's got tattoos and stuff on him. There are cooler versions of this Aquaman to be had. It's funny because, again, going back to the UPS store, when I was picking this box up, the lady there was commenting on how she was kind of excited about the Jason Momoa Aquaman stuff. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, Justice League has some potential. We'll see if it worked out or not. And she's like, so was he well cast for the movie? And I start with, well, let's see. Aquaman is a blonde Caucasian. Jason Momoa is not. So in that respect, no. But it's a cool take on the character. He fits that take on the character. And he did a season or two, I think, of Baywatch. So he's comfortable in the water.
Yeah.
Which I think is a major plus for an actor and stuff on this. And, you know, he was awesome in Stargate Atlantis and stuff. So it's a very different take than in the comics. But not the first time they've done a radically different take for Aquaman somewhere.
Mm.
In Batman the Brave and the Bold, they went with a very over-the-top, almost want to say Arthurian version of King Arthur the Aquaman. But he was one of those that was just boisterous and, you know, we shall call this the tale of whatever, you know, and just over-the-top, boisterous kind of character, which was a lot of fun even though you couldn't really believe half of the stories he was telling because he was, you know, exaggerating a bit.
Yeah.
I don't expect the Momoa Aquaman to be the least bit like that, or necessarily like the one in the comics, but as long as they keep kind of the core aspect and it's fun and it's cool, well, I'll give him some leeway. The other Funko Pop we've got is Steppenwolf, which is one of the characters from Apocalypse. Other ones they've got in this set are Batman, Wonder Woman, Cyborg, Flash, and Superman. So, geez, the rest of the Justice League, go figure. I'm not the world's biggest fan of the Apocalypse stuff. Steppenwolf is, I'm going to say, like the third tier of those characters once you get past, you know, Darkseid being the main one. And then you've got the other new gods of Lightray, Orion, Mr. Miracle, Big Barda, Highfather, and some of those. And this is one of the bad guys.
That's what I was wondering.
He was probably in the final season of the Super Friends cartoon when they had a lot of Apocalypse stuff.
A white box.
I was going to say, we've got the white box with the clear water bottle. Oh, sorry. It's on one side of the clear thing. It's got Wonder Woman with power, grace, and wisdom. So this is indeed what the straw went with.
Well, it's red and blue art, and it's very pop.
No pun intended.
But I think that's one of the things that I notice with this box is, and the boxes that Funko Pop is involved in, is even the things that aren't Funko Pops seem to have the Funko Pop art style.
Versus a pop art style. Yes. It's got the, Funko Pop Wonder Woman figures, that's what's on here. With the huge head and little body.
Yeah.
I've noticed that too, and
if you don't like the Funko Pop art style, if you don't like that bigger head and that almost, what, chibi art style maybe?
Yeah.
Then the Funko Pop boxes are going to be a miss for you because not only are you not going to like the Funko Pops, but I think the art might not appeal to you.
Well, and now that we're getting that World's Finest box.
Yes.
The appeal of this one is dropping. Mm-hmm. For many reasons. This is it for the box. Not even an answer key this time around.
That's a shame.
The shirt, okay, but not particularly impressive. The water bottle is nice, but I don't need the two Funko Pop figures.
Yeah.
And to your point, it's very Funko Pop heavy, both in terms of items and style. And now that we've got that other box as an option, I am rethinking this one.
Yeah.
So anything else on this box? We good?
I think we're good.
Cool. The package in front of me now is the Arctify pouch. We've gone back to the silver shiny one, which is kind of flat, 8.5 by 11. I think it works pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, opening that up, we shall see what this is. Unsurprisingly, it's a t-shirt because it's a t-shirt thing.
Mystery package.
T-shirt mystery package. This is a
cream or tan?
Light cream color Marvel shirt with kind of the Marvel letters with stuff, images in them, like you would see on one of their shows or movies. And then like a comic book page kind of set of panels beneath it with a Thor in one of them. Trying to make out some of the other characters. I guess Iron Man is the one down at the bottom. I'm almost wanting to say Nova for one of them. It doesn't seem to be based on any particular movie or show or whatnot.
No, it feels more like a celebration of Marvel.
Yeah.
And not with a specific art style that to me at least.
Well, it's like they took a page, I almost want to say of like an Avengers story, and then said, okay, here's a splash page. We're going to kind of cut it up as if it were panels.
Mm.
And then do a little bit of, okay, this one's a little brighter, a little darker, but very subtly.
Yeah.
So it's cool. It's nice. Nice, comfortable feel to it, too.
Yes, and this is the one that's about $13.
Yeah, and it's also a tagless shirt. I kind of prefer those. Yeah, kind of cool. A little hard to describe. The printing is such that they took something that was meant for kind of a rich, full-bleed comic page, printed it on a shirt, and it comes out not a little muddy, but when you then take it and kind of desaturate one of the panels, that's why I'm having a hard time identifying one of the characters.
Yeah.
But pretty cool. This to me is, again, you know, at the cost for it, the you're guaranteed to get a cool shirt every time. It's hard to go wrong with this.
I agree.
So Arctify, we discovered that at C2E2 a couple of years back.
Yeah.
and still enjoy it. It's probably been the thing that's been on our list of boxes that we've been getting the longest.
I think so. And it's been the easiest to say, yeah, keep going with it.
Yeah. Again, it's the lowest price of all the stuff we've been getting. It's mm-hmm. been consistently good quality.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the designs hit better than others with me, but some of the ones that really hit, like the Black Panther and a few others, are just awesome.
I think it's the one I've recommended to the most people.
Yeah.
I think it makes a great gift for, like, kids off at college, that kind of thing.
Well, I've got a lot of coworkers who come in with a comic book-themed kind of a shirt. This would be the sort of thing that'd make a good Christmas gift for them.
Yeah.
So anything else on this one?
I think we're done.
Okay, this next package is about a foot wide, about 13 and a half inches long. We'll say about 3.5 inches tall, and is from Hawaii.
My favorite place to get mystery boxes from.
Yes, this is from Jason. We'll open it up. I think I know the cause of this, but we'll double check. Don't want to jump the gun there. Let's see, we have Lion Coffee. I do feel obligated in this day and age of fake news to point out the spelling is L-I-O-N. Lest you think this is coffee that will make you tell fibs. All right, we have, let's see, a couple of these things I think are sticking together. There we go. We have dark chocolate Aloha Max macadamia nuts, I believe.
Yeah.
And a second box, so you can even have some. All right, we'll get to these in just a sec. We have more non-truthy coffee, so more Lion Coffee. Let's see, the packing paper has the
TV schedule.
Yeah, Saturday TV schedule in Hawaii. And let's see, okay, we've got the letter. We've got a few other things I'll get to in a few minutes. All right. Ooh, I like the shirt. Ooh, very nice. It is a t-shirt, kind of a grayish, and on the back, it's got a 75th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor, Courage, Sacrifice, Honor. Very cool.
That is an awesome shirt. And then a small logo on the...
Kind of a patch style, kind of a logo for the 75th...
that is really awesome.
Pearl Harbor. Very cool. I mean, very unfortunate thing to have happened in any state or for any war or whatever, but having been to the Pearl Harbor Memorial at one point...
Exactly. Yeah, that was a great shirt.
And having a father who's, you know, was career Navy for quite some time.
Yeah.
You know, who actually was with us when we visited Pearl Harbor. Yeah. Very cool. Very nice shirt. So thank you, Jason. Got the letter. Let me skim the letter real quick. Read it fully and thank him. Yep. Like I thought. A very belated happy birthday. I think this means I need to grow up.
No. I'm opposed to growing up.
See, coffee and macadamia nuts for the sister, sports page, of course, for the dad, and he apologizes for sending it a little bit late. Don't sweat it, Jason. I haven't grown up anymore in the meanwhile.
Hey, I like now, it when birthdays get to last.
The other stuff I skipped over because I wanted to get to the letter first is,
is it saran wrap
together? It's saran wrap together. It's some comics, which...
Now you have to figure out the saran wrap.
Now I have to figure out the saran wrap.
It's childproof.
It's a good way to send comics through the mail, though, to be honest.
It is a very good way, but he childproofed it.
I am a child, so... Despite what the birthday may indicate.
The sad thing is, you're my older brother.
I'm not sure how many people realize that. I believe I've gotten more than one comment over the years implying that you were the older one.
Really?
Of course, my favorite story along those lines is the one that a friend of ours told me one year at San Diego. We are meeting with a bunch of us gathering. I think it was up in the back of the convention center outside, just kind of chilling out for a bit. And this was 10 years ago. Had to be 10 years ago.
Yes,
had to be.
Yes. And thankfully, I was not present for this conversation.
A high school friend of mine, he's like, oh, I've got to tell you what happened. He had taken his then 5-6-year-old son to the daycare center at Comic-Con to check him in for a bit while he was going to go roam or whatever and, you know, let the kid play with the stuff they had there, whatever. Gets done with that, and before he has a chance to turn around, and you are a good couple of feet behind him, the young lady at the desk said, referencing you,
Would you like to check your daughter in, too?
Age difference between you and said friend is 5 years.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And when I heard the story, I'm like, did you?
Thank you.
Never try to guess someone's age. It's impossible to get right. All right.
Yes.
So what we have here is, pull this out, very cool, a signed cover for Death of Hawkman, and it's the Aaron Lopresti cover.
Oh, very cool.
I have known Aaron Lopresti through Comic-Con, seeing him there every year, for probably longer than he would care for me to admit.
Yeah.
Been a huge fan of his work for, I'm going to say, about 20 years, at least. The guy is not only a sensational artist, he's a terrific fellow. Highly recommend you check out his work and talk with him if you ever see him at a convention. He is just a really wonderful guy.
Yeah.
So thank you, Jason. Very cool. And what's interesting is we're now at the point in DC's continuity where, with the metal crossover, they're referencing a lot of Hawkman stuff.
Mm.
But alas, as you can probably guess from this, they killed him off. So it's... yeah. All right. And this is another comic, Journey of Heroes, the story of the 100th Infantry Battalion and 442nd Regimental Combat Team. Very interesting. This is, again, one of those kind of, you know, personal tales somebody has told, comic book format. This is the kind of stuff that I think typically flies under the radar. A lot of it is self-published and things of this ilk. But it's very personal stories about, in some cases, very historic events, even if the events they're talking about are a small portion of a bigger war or what have you.
Yeah.
But comics can be an incredibly effective way to tell those kinds of stories. But because sci-fi, superheroes, mystery, horror, supernatural are the prevailing genres in America, this sort of a thing is harder to come by unless you, again, stumble across them at a convention or otherwise know about them or are specifically looking for them.
Yeah.
So definitely interested in checking that out and seeing what I think of that.
But I think that kind of thing is what got us started going to the conventions. The discovery aspect. Filling in your backlist of missing comics and discovering new things that weren't in your comic shop.
Oh, absolutely. I used to love going to San Diego Comic-Con and going through between small press areas, certainly Artist Alley, and even back in the day, just the different comic book vendors and stuff there in terms of both publishers and stores. I remember one year, it's like, oh, I haven't ever read Omega Men. This guy's got the full run. And I was basically one year, and this was easily 30 years ago, if not longer. This was back when you could still park under the convention center.
Yeah.
And I would go, I would get a stack of books like a foot tall. And it's like, okay, that's either about as much as I can carry or about as much as I can fit in my backpack. And it's like, okay, here's a full run of Omega Men, or here's a bunch of Warlord, or here's a bunch of this or that or whatever. And that's how I filled out a lot of DC stuff. But, you know, I would do this. I'd get that foot. The guy would give me a pretty good deal. I would lug it down to the car, put it into a box there, whatever, head right back up.
Yeah.
Oh, look, there's more at the same booth.
Yeah.
Because it's like there's only so much I can carry at one time.
The early and mid-90s, we would specifically and purposely park at opposite ends of the convention center and give one another the spare set of keys to our car.
And at that point, it was only about a four-block-long convention center, but it's still 4 blocks long, and you're doing a lot of walking.
Well, and I was going to say, if you had the equivalent of a short box worth of comics you just bought, and my car was the one directly under you, it was so much easier for you to just go down, drop it in my car, and figure you'd get it from me when you got it from me within the next day or two.
Those were back in the days when I was young and energetic. Buying that much stuff now, it's heavier than I want to lug around, even for, can I just get it down 2 flights of stairs? Not that those flights of stairs are immediately there, but you get the idea of to a car or whatever. The further the car where I have to take it is.
Well, and I feel like there are fewer options for that kind of discovery now.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Certainly at conventions or at other conventions we've seen, let me
pause and think this through and make sure I'm saying something accurate. At San Diego, things like this Journey of Heroes and stuff like that gets crowded out. Whereas I found a few things this year and stuff, but in the last decade, I've found fewer and fewer new, hey, I haven't heard of this title at San Diego. But at places like C2E2, which to me is kind of that middle level, there's the national level conventions of the, you're almost willing to fly to another country for this size convention. Mm-hmm. San Diego, Toronto, New York, things that are just, wow, these are big.
Yeah.
And then there's C2E2, which really isn't that much smaller, but is one of those that you'll certainly go halfway across the continent and stuff. And in some cases on the guest list, you may also go cross international borders, fly over an ocean, whatever. And at those, you can get a lot more stuff. But then there's also like the Hawaiian conventions Jason's been going to and doing some episodes on. If you're in Hawaii, you're a little limited as to where you're going to go without having to spend some money to go fly to the mainland or something like that. And you're going to find certain people at a convention in Hawaii that you wouldn't find, say, up in Alaska, over in Maine, over in Florida, here in Central Texas. So it's a little bit more potluck, but sometimes you can find some very interesting stuff. I think it also comes down to the nature of the convention. Because the convention we have here in Austin, Texas is a wizard convention. That's a road show, and it's a little bit more, I don't want to say like chain fast food places or something, where it's almost the same regardless of city.
Yeah, but that's their intent.
That's absolutely their intent.
Their intent is to take the same experience as many places as possible, almost like the traveling carnivals.
Yeah. And I think there's a big advantage of that. I thought they had a very good show this year.
Yeah.
But it's also very different than when we went to, what was the one that was at the Long Center or whatever that we went to before Comic-Con one year. It wasn't the Alamo. It was one year we went to a convention here in town about a week or two before San Diego. On the way back from San Diego, we went to one in San Antonio or some such. And it was one that I was hoping would be every year because it was a locally kind of run show. And because of that, you're going to get people that are different than, hey, I can book this guy and he can go through this 15, 20 city tour. Nothing right or wrong about either, but you get different stuff.
Yeah.
And again, something like the Journey of Heroes that Jason got me here, that's the sort of thing you're more likely to find in whatever region the creator happens to be in and whatnot if they go to that show and stuff. Mm-hmm. So... to me, it's one of those things. If there is a local convention, it's always fun to go to. Certainly, if you go to a convention, I always make a point of walking the entire exhibit hall floor. Tucked into some corner of some booth, or maybe smack dab in the middle of Artist Alley, there's often going to be some gem that it's like, wow, I didn't even know this existed, but this is interesting. This is cool.
Yeah.
So again, thank you, Jason, for this stuff.
Yeah,
very much appreciated. I've survived yet another lap around the sun. And of course, you know, hey, we all get only so many of those. Don't know how many, but I always enjoy continuing to survive on that. So anything else on this? We good?
I think we're good.
Cool. Okay, we've got a series of boxes in front of us now.
Just to make things interesting.
Do you want to describe?
Oh, no, I'm going to give the initial preamble. Our mother asked us if I knew what I was giving you for Christmas. And I explained to her, I will be putting under the Christmas tree for you an empty box.
Which I'm okay with, since we're opening the box now, which is a little before Christmas. Which should be clear to people, since I'm going to put this episode up well before Christmas.
But I thought that if I... And she asked why. And I said, because he wants to enjoy the gift for weeks before Christmas.
Now, one of the things I think we should tell the listeners, some may realize this, some may not, we have on occasion gotten matching toys.
Yes,
we've gotten at times matching digital cameras. Oh, I'm trying to think of the Pebble watch.
It goes as far back as when we got the iPods with the really big memory.
It's one of those things that with a lot of these tech toys, to figure out how to really properly use them, it's just you use it, you figure stuff out, and if you've got somebody else, you can then tell them, hey, do this, and they can tell you, hey, have you found this out? So this is a way to get around the fact that I guess I just don't read manuals that often.
Does anybody?
No, nobody does. But it's nice to have the same sort of a thing, because that way, if you're having problems with it or whatever, somebody at least has a fighting chance to help you out or something.
Yeah.
So, go for the first boxes that are matching. So these are Nook Tablet 7s, matching ones. You got one, I got one.
Correct.
Now, listeners are probably thinking, but you guys are reading books on the Kindle. I've got a Paperwhite. We have both have a Fire.
Mm-hmm.
But for the holidays, Barnes & Noble took the Nook, this one, down to a ridiculously low price.
Yeah, including tax, it was under $33.
At which point, it's like, maybe it's better than a Kindle, maybe it's not. But for this, for $35 or whatever, I'm willing to find out.
Exactly. I've been curious about the competition to the Kindle. And this was an opportunity to find out without breaking the budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I will admit, I priced the Kobo, and that would have broken the budget.
It's one of those things that with the Paperwhite, I like it. It's lightweight. It's just, you don't even think about having it in the backpack or whatever. But it's a little limited compared to what, say, the Kindle Fire can do or whatever. Kindle Fire is really cool. It's a little bit heavier. Doesn't have anywhere near the battery life that the Paperwhite does, but that's e-ink display versus an actual color, display that can show, movies and stuff.
Well, the Fire is an interesting situation in terms of it runs apps, but they're Kindle Fire versions mm-hmm. of the apps. So they're kind of Android apps, but not really.
It's an Android platform that's become proprietary.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the Nook is that way or not. I know it's Android-based.
My understanding, in fact, they have an icon for the Play Store on here, is that the Nook didn't go the proprietary route and that you can get things out of the Google Play Store.
Okay, so just like I can on my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the advantage of something like this over, say, a cell phone is bigger screen size, stuff like that.
Yeah. And in fact, it says Google Play on the back.
Yeah.
Which is part of what I was curious about, is this has the ability to run more apps, or it seems like a wider variety of apps than the Kindle Fire.
And we should be able to, worst case, put the Kindle reader on this.
Yeah.
And it could do whatever reading we could do on the Kindle, but with a different interface and give us some other options.
Yeah.
Because I'm not unhappy with the Kindle.
No, and neither am I. I'm just curious about another experience.
Exactly. And that's one of those things that it seemed like it would be fun to do. For the investment cost, it was not that much.
Well, and one of the accessories I found, which I will open my next box.
I do want us to point out one of the other things that motivated this, because we haven't mentioned it, and I think it's relevant.
Yes.
You have, for many, many moons, when they had like a free Kindle book or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Been getting them.
Oh, yes.
So you have an extensive Kindle library.
That might be an understatement.
Her Kindle library is akin to my comic book library. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
The problem is with my comic book library, it just eats up space in the house. With her Kindle library, the problem she's had, to the listeners, but you've had,
is
the Kindles will download the covers of the books.
Yes.
Well, geez, how big of a deal is that? If you got one book, it's not a big deal at all. If you have two, it's twice as not big of a deal. But if you've got bazillions...
Once you cross over 30,000, you start exceeding the memory capabilities of an 8-gigabyte Kindle.
So the Kindle, her Kindle was getting full from the covers.
Yes.
To the point she was having problems putting books on the Kindle, kind of precluding the use of it to a degree.
What gets me is the covers insist on being saved on the device.
Yeah.
The books will save to the micro SD card.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to give one of my Kindles to our father, and I had to, because he's a child account on my account, I have to go through gymnastics when I download a book for him onto the device to not let it ever consider my account sinking or I crash the Kindle.
To me, that's something that is just a sign of the people who put the Kindle together never considered what if somebody had a gargantuan thing, a list of books or whatever. And I get it. It's an edge case. It's not common.
Yeah.
But since the Nook isn't going to download your entire Kindle library, you should still be able to read Kindle stuff on it, plus whatever else we get in whatever the Nook format is. That is, I think, part of what motivated you to look at these. And when we saw the price, it's like, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
So we've got that. You were going to open, we've got one or two other boxes around here related to this.
Right. Well, one of the accessories I got for me, mm-hmm. you did not express an interest in, but I thought this... and it's one of those, I won't use it daily. I get that, but a good accessory.
All right. You got the Travel Power Pack, which is a clip-on battery that clips onto, I guess, the case. Did these come with a case or we had to...
They do not come with a case. We're still looking for a case.
Still looking for a good case for the Nook Tablet 7. But this would extend the battery life on that.
Yes. So, for instance, if we were to take a flight from, say, Tokyo back to the United States,
mm-hmm.
and we were worried that either the Nook or the Kindle didn't have enough battery power to last, I have my handy dandy. I don't have to figure out where to set down the battery pack I'm connected to. It just clips right onto the case and I can just plug it in and keep going.
Whereas I've got one or two external battery things that I could use. So I didn't feel the need for that. Yeah. But certainly makes sense.
And then we got one other thing that each of us thought sounded interesting. So another empty box for you to get on Christmas morning.
Yeah, this was the accessory. Whenever we get toys, we get the accessories for the toys, because, I mean, why not? This one just made sense to me. It's the charging dock for the tablet, because, well, most of these things will just plug into a USB cable or whatnot. It's gotten to where the tiny, hard-to-see end of the cable has, there's the USB A, B, mini, micro, nano, and it, some of them are obvious to tell apart. There are a couple that are getting kind of tricky, whereas this, it's like, here is a thing to just set on your desk, drop the tablet in when you want it to charge. I went and got the similar sort of a thing for the Pebble watch. Just because, yeah, I had the cable sitting there, but it would get buried under other stuff. This was just an, oh yeah, I should go put that there. It was a more visible reminder.
Now, I do find it entertaining that this has an asterisk to tell you what the box does not contain down at the very bottom.
I think I've got a sticker on top of part of mine.
On part of it. Okay. Nook power kit and audio cable not included. So it's a power charging base that does not include connection to power because they assume you got that with the Nook itself.
Okay, that's kind of crazy. Does it require a proprietary cable?
I believe it is a different cable than the usual USB.
It says it's got a charger and a micro USB cable.
Now, that's interesting.
So, hopefully, it's a standard cable and it's not a big deal. But it is, that's the exact thing I was talking about of being a pain.
It is this cable. It is the cable from the Nook 7 that connects into the base.
Yeah, I understand that. The question is it a regular cable that we may have a few others lying around? Because whatever cable came with this, I kind of want to hang on towards this for when I travel. One of the things we got pre-San Diego Comic-Con this year was a couple of little wall outlet to two USB outlet things just for charging. Everything charges via USB now. Everything. So when we get a chance, we'll open these up further and play with these. So possibly on the next one of these in a couple of months.
I think it's a different cable. And the reason I say that is look at the back of the travel power pack I got. It says that a different cable charges the power pack than goes from the power pack to the Nook.
Okay. Well, we'll have to figure that out. That
and
is interesting.
And it was micro USB that goes into the power pack.
We've got one or two other devices like the LG 360 cameras that need a particular cable.
I find it annoying.
This is, again, why we get matching toys to where, as one of us discovers, hey, did you notice?
Yes.
And again, the LG is a good example of another toy, as is the Yi Action Cam.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll play around with these things, see what we think. And maybe on the next one of these collector box lights, do a segment or maybe the one after that. It depends. When we've gotten enough that we think we have something worthwhile to say. And also just how many other things we've got in that other episode. Because this episode may be a little lighter than usual because a couple of the boxes have just been delayed.
Yeah.
So that's been happening.
I don't know how much of that is... holiday rush and how much of that is just what's going on with those businesses. But
I think some of it is they've had particular items they want to put in the boxes, and there have been delays on the manufacturing and getting those items.
Now, the most interesting delay email we got was from the Star Trek box, because it was originally supposed to arrive before Christmas. And when they realized it wouldn't arrive in time for Christmas, they sent a coupon for mm-hmm. one of the websites they're affiliated with, or yeah, I guess coupon's the right phrase. A gift certificate maybe is a more accurate one, because you don't, it's not a discount, it's a just a right. value. But they also promised, not that it's come yet, a box with a couple Star Trek related items. So you'd have something to put under the tree.
Yeah. Well, and again, I don't know how long the price on this Nook was good for, but in terms of people looking for stuff to put under a tree,
it was only about 24 hours. It was genuinely Cyber Monday.
All right. I was just going to say other people may consider, because if you get somebody, you know, like a kid or spouse or whatever, or sibling, an e-reader like this, sometimes there's easy ways to get them, you know, either a Kindle or Nook book of like a Star Trek novel or something else like that.
It's amazing how easy it is to send both Kindle and Nook books as gifts. One thing I've noticed is if you send someone a Kindle book as a gift, doesn't matter what email address you use, you send it to them, they get the email, they take that, they go into their account, they claim it. With Nook, if you don't send it to the email address attached to their Nook account, it's very difficult to claim that book and get it into their Nook library.
That sort of, if you don't hit the right email address, is not that uncommon. So, yeah, there are times where if you don't get it to the right one, yeah, it just happens.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to play with these.
Me too.
See what we think. I'm trying to be doing more reading of books. And I've got a number of tech books that I've got different formats of. Haven't really spent the time to figure out how to get them on the Kindle. It may be much easier to get them on here. And there's also a little bit of I don't want to say division of church and state, but if I put the tech books on this, maybe that goes more to the office. Maybe the Kindle does, vice versa.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, not contaminating my enjoyable reading with the I really ought to read this and learn this type stuff.
Well, and it makes the library easier to sort through, because I found even the Kindle collections is a little challenging to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I like the Kindle. I'm not going to say I love it. I'm not going to say I think, wow, this is a brilliant interface. I don't think it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those that it doesn't sort the books quite in the order I would expect, or give me a lot of orders for how I'd like to sort them. Stuff like that. So that's part of why I wanted to check out the Nook.
I will admit that once I saw this, I looked to see Kobo was the only other big name.
And I wouldn't say that's even anywhere near as big as this, but it is a name.
Yeah, exactly. And their least expensive device was well over $100.
Okay, now Kindle's attached to Amazon.
Yes.
Nook, Barnes & Noble.
Correct.
Kobo?
Used to be Borders.
Oh.
And that's why I'm so familiar with it.
Interesting. That's why it's almost kind of orphaned. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And there's an international company that starts with an R that I can't think of the name of. I'll come up with it later. But anyways, that is now shepherding it, if you will.
Okay.
And I believe Kobo, I'm like 99% sure, Kobo took over all the customers from Sony e-readers.
Oh,
because Borders was still doing fairly well when Sony's ebook division went down.
Yeah. E-readers, I think, are definitely very promising. I still like having tangible books.
So do I.
So, like for the Time Wars series, that's why I bought the paperbacks and said, okay, I can get the digital edition, the Kindle version for another buck, versus just getting the Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because I already have the previous cut of the Time Wars books from back in the day. But it's just a matter of I like having the tangible reminder there's something to read.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I've been gradually getting our father onto that Kindle. I gave him my first Kindle, which was the Kindle 6, Kindle Fire 6. Then I had that Kindle Fire 7 that didn't have enough memory.
Mm-hmm.
He uses that one for library books.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's been interesting having him compare the Kindle Fire 6 and the Kindle Fire 7 experience, because there are differences.
The other advantage to having multiple readers like that is, as you drain the battery dry on one, you can use the other as it's charging.
Yeah. He's been reading the Washington Post a lot on it and enjoying it. But it's been interesting as he's been trying to figure out what kind of books he'll want on it for a vacation, because he's realizing the power of, I can take a lot of books with me, but he doesn't want my 30,000 book type library to fumble through. He wants a few choice books.
Yeah.
A dozen or under that he knows he'll want to read.
On a trip, I would want to have pre-selected, these are the ones I think I want to read. Now, I'd like the option of being able to get the others.
Yes.
But I don't want to have to go sift through my entire library.
Yeah.
Just to get to a handful of them.
And I think that's what Kindle thought their collections would enable.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. For instance, I have a Kindle collection that's John recommended.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, the e-reader I really want to get but doesn't exist yet is one that is about as light as the Paperwhite, but a little, but about magazine-sized, full color, and has comics.
Yeah.
And magazine would be a little bigger than comic size, which means the fonts would be a little bigger, which would be a little easier to read, and still want to be able to zoom in. But something like that, where I could, and have a ton of storage on it, to where if I wanted to have a pretty hefty, like what I've read all year on there, I could, but also be able to organize it to where it's just, hey, what's currently in my reading list, or what did I get this week or last week, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Something that gives me a little bit of control over the ordering. Well,
in terms of search capabilities, I wish, I mean, if I could get on a focus group for one of these e-readers and make a few suggestions of, look, if you would make it to where I could search my library or organize it by length of book.
Yeah.
So when I'm just in the mood for a 30-minute or under read, all the books that are 30 pages or under shift to the top.
Or I've got a 3-hour flight followed by a 4-hour flight or whatever. I've got so much travel time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. It would be so powerful.
And they've got a lot of this information. They just don't have the interface for it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So anything else on this? We good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.